From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 6th edition of Commodity Week. Hot, dry weather in the Midwest continues and the markets are going sharply higher. We'll try to find out how high and what might happen to demand as we make our way through this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dave Luce of the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Illinois Market Corn Marketing Board. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. Our panelists today with us include Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including the opening, pre-opening, and closing market reports, Commodity Week, and our midday updates at willag.org. One note about this edition of Commodity Week. It was not recorded on the 6th day of July at the end of the week, so we do not have closing numbers or settlement prices, weekly changes for you. We recorded on Thursday afternoon, July the 5th. Well, let's start with this question for both Dan Zwicker and Bill Mayer. And we'll start with you, Dan. It's been a really strong marketplace in Chicago. Futures have popped and on the Thursday of this week moved sharply higher, making new contract highs for, I think, maybe new crop corn.
Yes, we did. Actually, down here at the Gulf, we got the highest cash prices. We did hit a record $8 level here this week. So the weather definitely has a lot of people worrying about the size of supply we're going to have at the end of the day, and just continued worry over declining crop prospects.
And I want to get to Bill in just a second and ask him about crop prospects in our part of the world, but you're a little bit closer to that part of the world that will be providing the interim or the additional corn that USDA was hoping would backfill a short crop from last year. Has it begun to come in, and are you getting any indication of whether corn crop from Memphis and maybe in parts of Tennessee is very good or not?
It's just starting. It's real close. From Memphis south, the crop is should be pretty good crop. Now, we don't know if we're going to have some aflatoxin in it or not, but they pollinated a whole long time ago before the heat came and while there was still some rain around. So from Memphis south, we should have a pretty good crop, and that should be coming right at us. I didn't have time today to check with the guys to see if there's anything coming in yet or not, but we're real close. Once you get Memphis on up to St. Louis area, the lower third of Illinois, and you get into Kentucky and southern Indiana, Ohio River Valley, we're probably going to have early harvest, but we're probably not going to have much to harvest. It's really been stressful. They've missed out on just about everything, and just constant heat. But the corn from Memphis South should supply the export channels, at least with adequate corn. You talk to a lot of your cash people, they feel comfortable that the September contract will go down underneath the December. From a technical perspective, I don't necessarily agree with that, but at least from a fundamental point of view, they feel that there'll be enough cash corn come in that they'll be able to push September into carry or at least a discount to December.
And then, Bill, if you could give us an idea in the East Central part of Illinois, some of the areas that you talk to producers in the primary Corn Belt growing states, what condition might be like?
Well, it's definitely worse today than it was 10 days ago. I mean, our weather just continues to deteriorate this crop. I think if you look in southern Illinois, as Dan was saying, I think some of that stuff where it's through pollination is maybe past the point of no return. We're hearing some requests for silage chopping and things like that coming in. I think that the corn really from Central Illinois north looks surprisingly well, but the scoop is that we're in the middle of pollination or the later stages in some cases of pollination, and we've got this heat building. I mean, when we're challenging the 1936 highs on a day like today, that's not good when you're in the pollination. I looked this morning, I think about, if you look at the planting progress, I think about 80% of the corn should pretty much be through pollination by the end of next week if you just kind of look at where we when we planted it. So we're just in the critical stage. I don't know that anybody knows how it's going to come out from an agronomic standpoint. We know that it's not good. We know that it's tough to get good pollination whenever you got this kind of heat, and especially with the dryness that we've had. So how much? I mean, I don't even want to venture a guess as to how much we've hurt the yield at this point.
The futures market, I suppose, is trading about 3 weeks ahead on what the crop looks like. Emerson Nafziger was writing in the bulletin today, which you can find online if you'd like at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu, on ideas that about the last third of July, we might be able to take a look, get an idea how well, Nick, or pollination went and start on grain fill at that point.
I think the trade is trading pretty much the numbers that you see coming out from the private analyst here in recent days, 148 to 150. I think that's kind of where we're at as far as where the trade's trading this thing. I think the trade in the last several days here has assumed that we have to start destroying some of the demand. We have to start rationing some of the usage. And, now it's a matter of if the crop continues to get worse, do we have to, cut back more usage, and how high do we have to go to do that? One thing for certain is we always take the market higher than we need to take it to get, things balanced out. But bottom line, and I've heard Dan speak on this before, we have to have about a billion bushel left here come, next August of 13 to get us, through the pipeline.
Dan, do you think the trade is doing the job of demand destruction?
Well, I think it kind of hit this week. I think up until the end of last week, I think they were thinking, well, yeah, we can maybe accept the crop down to the 155 area each type thing. And I think, as Bill mentioned, 155 multiplied by the number of acres would give us a so-called adequate supply. But once you start going down underneath 155, if indeed that's where we're at, down in that 150 or back to last year's level, then you're really tightening up the balance sheet pretty tight. So, you got to keep in mind the trade is always going to overdo this thing, just like a month ago or 5 weeks ago or wherever it was when USDA came out with their 166 bushel yield based upon early planting, how bearish everybody got going into the end of May. Now we're doing the flip-flop of that, trying to see how low or how small the crop's going to get.
things may change dramatically tomorrow. It's unlikely, I suppose, that it would turn bearish that quickly. So let's take us through the technical side of the marketplace as it stands on a Thursday afternoon. Dan, what does the corn and the soybean chart tell you?
Well, the December corn chart, a couple points that I was looking at is the corrective decline that we had there in late June. If you kind of took the midpoint of that, which basically was somewhere around 639, and then if you'd want to swing that off, the corrective low point of like 546, then that would kind of project up to a number around the 732. That's kind of what I have been looking at from a technical perspective up until today's gap. Now, today's gap, I think the midpoint of the gap here on Thursday is going to be 681, and you'd want to measure that from the 622 point that we had last week. That kind of takes you on up here to about the 740. So I think, at least on the short run anyway, a lot of your technical people are looking at this 730, 740 area as the next upside target. And, of course, you know, targets are targets. If we meet that, then we'll talk about something higher.
And for soybean?
Soybeans, taking a look at the soybean chart, basically, I had an objective to come on up into this 1530 area as the first objective. And now, if you'd want to use the gap that we left here today, here on Thursday, the midpoint of that is like 1485. You'd measure that off of this 1393 low, and that gives you a shot here at maybe 1577. So that's kind of the targets for technicians. While I'm talking about these charts are on CGB Enterprises on Facebook. So for those of you that are listening and want to look at these charts, all you have to do is like CGB Enterprises, and you will have these charts come right onto your Facebook page. So you can kind of look at that if you're interested in that.
Well, that's pretty neat. Thank you for that little tidbit, and I'm sure there will be many people at Facebook and try to pick that up. Okay, so the next thing, and I think we'll start, Bill, with you on this one and then maybe move back to Dan. Producers are not going to want to make a sale at this point. The question really is, should they think about making a sale? And I know they'll be concerned that there won't be a crop, but I don't remember the last time they didn't raise half a crop. I don't know whether it's been decades or 20 years, whether it was 88. I think that destruction was that wasn't half a crop destruction either at that point, I don't think. Bill?
Yeah, I mean, locally here, we got today, Thursday, we got above $7, I know, cash for fall corn delivered. So it's time to probably look at that and examine that. To sit here and make some kind of blanket statement on that is pretty hard right now, Todd. But this is where I think the producer needs to kind of go through a series of questions to ask themselves, you know, number one, are you insured? You know, number two, what is your guaranteed bushels? I think you need to probably start working with your guaranteed bushels at this point in time, unless you're, you know, in an area maybe that's had some fortunate rains. Number three is, you know, how many bushels per acre, forget the percentages, how many bushels per acre have you got sold currently, and what do you feel like you could sell up to? And then there's tools that you can look at, you know, okay, what happens if I go ahead and sell another 15, 20 bushel to the acre here at $7? What does that do to me from a bottom line standpoint? Because you are guaranteed, I guess one other thing I should stick in there, if you're insured, make sure do you have the harvest price on your insurance, because that's extremely important in a year like this. And try to look at some black and white numbers. And I know it's an emotional, stressful situation out there right now, but there are some things that a person can look at. And with the insurance, I mean, this is one reason that you take the crop insurance. It does give you the type of call option in case you'd make sales and don't have those bushels. So make sure you figure that into your calculations. And, you know, it may be wise as you're running the market up here and can get $7 plus to look at getting a little bit of that taken care of.
Are you going to do that in the cash market, or is that too dangerous?
And that's, again, depends on the situation. But if a person doesn't want to do cash market, there again, the insurance does cover you in case you have to pay the elevator back and don't raise the bushels. But there are puts available, too, that at least put a floor underneath the market to give you some, you know, if we get into a situation like we did at the end of last summer where we dropped over $2 within a matter of a week and a half there. So,
Dan, your thoughts?
My thoughts are stay patient. Probably more than likely, and this is what happens. I've seen it happen so many times over the years, watching market advisory services and being one of them at one point in time, is that probably your market advisor's already got you 25 or 50% sold at a much lower level, and now you're caught. You don't know what to do. And this is what usually happens when you get into a drought or a short crop situation, is as a rule, farmers got themselves sold up too early, too soon, and then now they become deer in the headlight type, don't know what to do. And I think, as Bill mentioned, you have to evaluate your own individual situation and consider your crop insurance. And that the problem you get into, a lot of the crop insurance policies are not necessarily in sync with a lot of the National Feed and Grain Association rules. And, you know, if you're in a situation where you don't think you can fulfill a contract type thing, basically those rules would imply that you get out of that contract right away. And it gets tricky because you might be better off staying with it on the insurance side. My guess is that by the time the fall price is established, this thing will be long gone. We will have the higher prices. They will have come and gone. Then, you know, it gets real tricky. So, you know, you have to evaluate on an individual basis. The only thing that I noticed this morning that made me a little nervous is I think the New York Times did come out with an article talking about the Midwest drought. So you have to be careful and keep an eye on national news media if they start talking about it. I've seen these come and go, and that's usually a good sign that you're getting close to some kind of top. But
yeah, they had the drought monitor on MSNBC this afternoon.
And the New York Times did cover it today on Thursday. And our own Daryl Good was in that.
Yeah. And those are usually death wishes, so you get a little worried on that. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to top right today or tomorrow, but it means that we never want to be on the front page when it comes to prices, because once we hit the front page in agriculture, it's not long before markets at least begin a relaxation of some kind to the downside.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point that was brought up here as far as the timing of buying back contracts. That's got to be done in sync with the crop insurance. If you feel it is not in conjunction with the rules that you got to follow on the cash side of it, there are some tools that you can do it the other way, do it through the board or something like that.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists include Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and Bill Mayer, who you just heard from Strategic Farm Marketing. He's from right here in Champaign, Illinois. On the phone line is Illinois Corn Growers Association, Illinois Marketing Board, and we'll call him an ethanol expert, but he's a demand expert, Dave Luce from Bloomington. Good afternoon to you, Dave. Thanks for waiting patiently to join us on this conversation. What's your assessment at this point of what demand looks like for the corn market and how ethanol can or maybe cannot survive such high prices?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me on this show, Todd. I've certainly learned an awful lot in the last 15 or 20 minutes myself and appreciate being a part of it. I think right now it's too early to try to predict what's going to happen with corn demand and corn ethanol. We can speculate all we want to. A lot of people are comparing this year to 2008 as far as the ethanol industry is concerned, are trying to come up with some of those comparisons. But the ethanol industry is a completely different industry today than it was in 2008. Our plants are much more efficient, much better managed, not only on the production side, but also on the risk management side, their commodity purchase side. I think you have to remember that these corn ethanol plants are actually managing four different commodities, commodities that they really don't have control of, as most independent marketers don't. But corn prices, ethanol prices, price of distillers' grains, and, of course, natural gas prices. And with those four commodities, there's a lot of risk associated with trying to manage that. We're seeing some reduction in production. There's probably about five plants that are idle right now. Obviously, as you guys know, that in the summer months, the plants tend to become a little less efficient anyway, trying to manage that heat that we're seeing right now. They need to keep the fermenters at a certain temperature, and that's always a concern and extreme management issue this time of the year. So they'll tend to reduce efficiency anyway, and some of these plants are using this period of time to shut down and do some needed maintenance. But really, the overall capacity factor is over 90%. The margins, as you guys know, are real thin. Some of them are bleeding. But they're in much better shape than they were in 2008 and will weather this storm through their ability to manage.
It looks to me, Dave, like along with the corn prices being higher, the lower gasoline or crude oil prices seem to be having a pretty negative effect too from a margin standpoint. What do you see, or have you looked at the energy, and what do you see there for the down the road as far as levels and that type of thing, demand?
Well, you're absolutely right. The demand for gasoline has been reduced. Part of that is due to the success of the ethanol program, reducing imports. Also, it's due to this overall economic conditions. Third is that I think our vehicles are becoming a little more efficient, so that's reducing usage somewhat. You know, over time, it's hard to say, but there are predictions that overall gasoline demand will continue decreasing as we produce more ethanol and as our vehicle fleet becomes more efficient. And this is also something we have to take into account. I think, you know, normally we're not used to seeing a decline in gasoline demand in the summer months, but this is somewhat unusual from that standpoint. And they're just, and as you said, they are definitely subject to the price of oil and that relationship between ethanol and gasoline. Since January 1st, ethanol prices have been, for the most part, somewhere between 80 cents and a dollar cheaper than gasoline, just due to the relative price structure. So ethanol has been a tremendous value to the consumers, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to see the blend go from 10% to E15, because not only would it benefit the ethanol plants, but it would also benefit the consumers.
Dave, one of the rumors on the floor here today was that fear that USDA or EPA could relax the mandate at some point in time here, and because of a supply threatening types of corn production number coming out, how much does that worry your group, and what kind of timing would you look for the politics to get pretty hot on something like that?
Well, I think we're hearing some of that now. We're probably more concerned about what could happen after January 1st with potential legislation that might be introduced related to that. We would certainly encourage EPA not to move ahead in that regard right now. I think the market can sort this thing out. And as you know, the ethanol plants are quick to respond to changes in the market, whether it be corn prices, whether it be gasoline prices and all that. That they can probably respond faster than other sectors of the corn industry. And so, you know, as of last year, I think we produced 13.2 billion gallons for the RFS2. We overachieved the goals in the RFS2. We've overachieved since 2007. And if we didn't have an export market of 1 billion gallons last year, our industry would have really been hurting, and the corn industry as well. So there's some built-in buffers already in that market, and we're wanting to see, you know, the marketplace work.
And I might just add to that too, Dave, that, I mean, the government so far hasn't really shown that there is any critical situation, and whether they will next week on the supply demand is debatable, how much they could drop yield in that. But I mean, on their last carryout projection, they had surplus corn.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And even if we go down to you know, some of the bushels per acre that they're talking about, with the acres out there, we're probably still a little bit ahead of last year. But it's still really too early to tell. And I think the ethanol industry already has a built-in arbitrage to it that allows it to react quickly if it has to. And I think we need to make sure we allow the markets to work that way.
Are the RINs part of that arbitrage as well?
Obviously, they will be. Now, RINs for corn-based ethanol right now is about 2 cents a gallon because of the tremendous amount of, you know, above and beyond the requirements that the corn ethanol industry has produced. And those RINs will actually stay in place through next year, probably around that price. So, you know, it's actually 1.5, 2 years from now before the RINs on the corn ethanol side, I think, would have any kind of impact at all. EPA also has to take into account that California is under this low carbon fuel standard right now, and they're ramping up the increased incentives through that program for sugarcane ethanol, which is starting to come into that marketplace. And Brazilian ethanol is now being served in part by U.S. ethanol to offset that demand. So we have that in play now, that if they do something with the RFS2, may be a real detriment to the corn industry.
Dave, thanks so much. That's Dave Luce. He's with the Illinois Corn Growers Association, the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. Thanks to him for being our guest on Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio included Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. If you'd like to hear our program again, you can do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.